League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Correa drives one deep center field, all the way back to Tavares. Forget about it. Three-run jack, Carlos Correa. The Astros out in front 3-0 on Correa's 23rd home run of the year.
You see the distance on it?
Yeah, 440 something.
Yeah, I think it was four. I saw 441, 442.
Yeah.
That is big. That's
well, and
big.
He reacted like, and you knew it from the time it left the bat, it was gone. Did you see Chandler Rome and others' quotes from Correa after the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's more what I was.
You don't like him quoting WOBA and exit velocity and expected WBA?
I like all those things, Jeremy, if you didn't preface it by saying in free agency. These are the things that are looked at more than exit velocity.
He's right.
And I know that, look, as we keep saying, it's a business, right? So I know that you got to take care of you first. So I get it. I just don't think it's wise when you're still playing and possibly playing for a World Series title with the team that got you to this point that you make that kind of statement publicly because it's a bad look.
Correa is really good at talking. Correa is a good speaker. Sometimes he can speak a little bit too much. Yeah, I think so. I think he's very honest too. He's somebody that's like he's transparent.
He tells you what he is. Has he always had those?
I don't know.
If you all of a sudden it's like they are like everything is like pearly white and perfect.
Maybe that helps in free agency too.
Remember how James
smile.
Harden one day just had perfect teeth?
Yes,
he didn't always.
He had
the snaggle booth. Bush teeth throw out.
So you don't care that Carlos Correa's WOBA is 366 or his expected WOBA is 374 or his wins runs created plus is 137? That doesn't interest you?
It does as long as he's an Astro. It does, and as long as his thinking is, this is how I make my team better on a daily basis. I have more of a problem with it because it's a contract year and you should be focused on this team until it's not your team and instead... It's coming up about in free agency. This is what's looked at the best. It isn't, hey, with this stretch of games we got coming up, we need to capitalize. I need to be at my best. No, he's already talking about being gone or at least being on the market. That worries me a little bit.
Well, 24.8 runs above average based on WOBA. I mean, that's about as good as you can get in Major League Baseball. It's going to give him a $300 million contract for 10 years in the offseason. What is the window for this Astros team? Because... Look, this might be the last go around. You've heard people allude to it. You heard Correa allude to it yesterday, was saying, look, in free agency, general managers, they look at these projected stats and these sabermetrical stats that way they can project productivity. And Correa has an eye on it. You know, he has an eye in free agency. Oh, yeah. Who wouldn't?
Well, he obviously just told you he does.
And, well, I mean, I don't blame him either.
Well, because
don't say it. I'm with you on that.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. Because you already know on a prove it deal, he's proven it, right?
Yes.
So we know with everybody that starts tweeting every time he hits a home run or does something good, pay the man, pay the man, pay the man. Okay, but how much are you willing to pay the man? That's what it comes down to. I totally get that he bet on himself and he's winning. But it's not what I want to hear with a team that has to be winning, has a chance to be winning at the end of the season.
I'm with you on that. And that's why sometimes he can probably talk a little bit too much because I understand that's what a player would be thinking. Look, it's what I would be thinking. If I had 17 games left in a regular season, the playoffs to come, and then I'm going to be a $300 million man, yeah, that'd be something that's on my mind if I'm getting upwards of $30 million. And the whole like pay him thing, pay him, pay him, pay him. I hate when people do that because there's always two sides to it too, right? Like it's, okay, you have a prospect, trade the prospect. Okay, well, what are you getting? Like, there's always it's never the full story. Paying him isn't the full story. Pay him what? Trade him for what? Like, there's always more to the equation. There's always that extra variable that you leave off. If you're just saying pay him, that's only half the story. Pay him what? You want to pay him $400 million for the next 20 years? Probably not. So what exactly are you paying him? That's something that's kind of a pet peeve of mine. But Correa mentioned free agency yesterday. Correa mentioned in the past, look, I mean, this is something that he's probably going to test. Bregman's even alluded to the fact that this could be the last time the infield of the last 5 years is here together. And a lot of people think that this is the last go-round, the last rodeo. People at the trade deadline were saying, let's go for it. This is the last chance we have for the Houston Astros to be a legitimate contender for the World Series. So what is the Astros' window to be a World Series contender?
Not even close to being closed, Jeremy. Here's the thing. The Astros team as we know it, the 2017 core group of players that they've hung on to as long as they could to try and keep winning with, is probably over after this season because Correa is going to exit stage left. And like you said, he's going to get a massive deal and play somewhere else. That doesn't mean that the Astros winning changes or stops. That doesn't mean that they can't keep on the same kind of upward projection that they've been on and maintain where they've been simply because they have a pitching staff that is young, under team control, under contracts that are very team friendly. They're gaining a whole bunch of money back from the top two guys that have been top guys in their rotation, making oodles and oodles of money, 30 plus a year in the case of Verlander and Greinke. So you've got massive amounts of money and you're getting Correa's contract off the books. You've got all of that in your back pocket. You can go and replace him, or like we've talked about, you can get a third baseman and slide Bregman over, and those deals are done. And therefore, you're still good because the rest of this lineup is too good. We talk about the fact that we can afford to have Maldonado at the end of it, whether he hits 175 or not, because of the fact that 1-8 is so good. You just found two diamonds in the rough. One for sure, maybe two, in Siri and the fact that you have Myers as young outfielders, again, under team control at cheap contracts, going to be here for a long time. Tucker, still for a couple years, going to be cheaper until you got to pay him. So that's another issue you don't have to deal with. You got to reconstruct your bullpen. You got to replace Correa. But other than that, there's nothing that says, look, on the downside, maybe it's just winning the division title and then trying to catch lightning in a bottle in the playoffs. It's not going to be like you are favored and feared like you've been in the past. But it, by no means in any way, shape, or form, are they going away anytime soon from competing for a division title and a playoff berth?
Yeah, like 2019 Astros were good, great, right? Because you had Verlander and Cole. And this current version of the Astros, 2021, I don't think they're as good as the 2019 Astros, because you had the two horses at the top of the mm-hmm. rotation. You get Verlander, Cole at the top of the rotation, that team was deadly. This team doesn't have that, but it's still a team that's going to make the playoffs and is one of the favorites to get to the World Series out of the American League, and the American League's wide open. If you look at what you have coming back into the future, Kyle Tucker, how good has he been? Yeah. Jordan Alvarez is a slugger who I think is going to hit 40, 45 home runs as a career high at some point in his career. You still have veterans like Bregman and Altuve, Michael Brantley, who's been a little slumping a little bit towards the end of the year, and he's hurt.
But how can you bitch about a guy that's fighting for the batting title, hitting 300-plus, and maybe doesn't hit long balls, but he gets you the extra base hits, and he gets you knocks when you need them?
Charlie's been mentioning if you get a starter in the playoffs at the lefty, you sit down Michael Brantley. So I pulled up the numbers yesterday. You know Martin Maldonado is better against lefties than Michael Brantley? That's a terrifying thought. Ooh, it's a terrifying thought.
Yeah, I did not know that.
Your offense is still going to be very good because you have seven really good offensive players on this team. That's not even counting Jake Myers, Chaz McCormick, on what they could eventually be. Maybe Jose Siri. I know people are kind of high on him too. But at the very minimum, you have the six guys that you mentioned coming back. Still a very good offense, even if Correa leaves and you don't replace it with anything else. You have a starting rotation that I like. It doesn't have the top-end starter like
but
Verlander.
But you can go get one.
You can go get one. I mean, I'm happy with the rotation you have coming back.
Yeah, I am
McCullers, Fromber, Christian Javier, Urquidy, Luis Garcia. That's a rotation
wins
a lot of games.
Yep.
This window's nowhere near closing.
You know what they are, Jeremy? They're the Cleveland Indians without the budget constraints and small market concerns. They are a team that can actually win almost as much by losing at three of the biggest names maybe in franchise history in the last 10 years because of the fact that wisely the other contracts from a scouting department, from a player personnel department, they found and held on to the guys that they knew could play. They were able to weed out the guys that they knew couldn't play as well, though other teams didn't know as much, and they got something for them while opening up the avenues so that they continue to play and progress in the system to get to the major league level. And now, because of all the cash in their back pocket, if they choose to do nothing with the guys they have on their roster currently, Greinke, Verlander, Correa, they have a whole wad of cash that at the, and it doesn't have to be this free agency, right? We've seen the Charlie Mortons and the Garrett Coles and the different resurrected stories of, at any time, if you get a guy that has been good, not great, and you give him to Brent Strom, there's a chance that he could be great real quick. And so it's not that it has to happen all off season, but they're in a very, very, very good position.
Also, consider how you traded for a couple of pitchers that have been key factors on this team. Look how you got Verlander. You got Verlander in the August 31st deadline for a couple of prospects that are in the bigs now, but nothing that was a king's ransom. And basically, you got him for taking on the contract.
Yeah. Daz Cameron maybe ends up being an all-star someday. Yep. But for the guys you gave up, do that deal 100 times out of 100.
I like Rodgers, but Rodgers is like Martin Maldonado. Really good defender, ain't going to hit a lick. The Zach Greinke trade, I think you gave up more than you thought you needed to, but those
it's
guys
hard
really
for
haven't
you to give
turned.
Up on beer, but you gave up on beer to get Greinke, and you know what? You reap the benefits because we don't know what beer ever may amount to, and the guys you gave up to Arizona, by the time they're good, you won't be. So you had to go for it. You did.
See, I think that's the position where the Astros, like, if they trade for an ace like caliber starter, to me it's going to be by trade, not via free agency, because I don't see them giving out the huge $25-30 million for 7 year type of contract. I think it's something that you trade for, like Max Scherzer, whenever he was traded to the Dodgers last year of his deal, something like that, where you're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. But yeah, the Astros in a good spot going forward. What do you think, Houston? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You know what is always fun to watch from an Astros fan perspective? I believe I get the feel
dumb
of this when I
text.
Talk about the polls from the city. Maybe that. I didn't see anything like that. But I was talking more about the collapse of that is the New York Yankees. You know, the Yankees are in fourth place in the AL East.
Do you see a tear in my eye?
They're in fourth place in the AL East. Now, they're only a half game back from the wild card. Toronto and Boston tied. New York's a half game back. They've lost four of their last six. Their fans are losing their mind, and perhaps their biggest celebrity fan, Nick Turturro, he's losing his mind.
Wild pitch. Two strikes. What else could happen? You can't make it up. You can't make it up. It doesn't matter. If there's a way to lose, they'll lose. I knew it. Good thing I wasn't watching the thing. Good thing. I knew it. I said it must have been a wild pitch something. How does that happen? Against the Orioles of all people.
I want to know what he would have sounded like if he had been watching the game.
Yeah, you talk about a guy with issues watching games. Holy cow.
He wasn't watching the game.
Well, he knew what happened.
Yeah, he found out later. Like, but, I mean, he probably would have shot himself if he was watching the game.
Ask the same question you asked of me of the Astros to a Yankees fan right now in terms of how they feel about what's the future of this team. Because they already struggle with starting pitching. But think about the bloated contracts that they've had to absorb that they have to continue to eat when they've got the massive deal for Cole, which, of course, is probably the best of the bunch. But then you talk about Giancarlo Stanton, who has never played a healthy full season since he got the monster deal and looks like he never will. And you traded for Joey Gallo. Okay, another big bopper who can't hit for average, but he's going to be headed for a big money contract you don't want to give. I get sick and tired of Yankee fans telling me they don't need a shortstop. Oh, my God, do they need a shortstop?
Oh, yeah,
so the next logical move for Yankee people, Yankee fans, is, again, if you can't beat them, join them. If they don't make the playoffs or they get bumped out or, you know, even if they lose to the Astros, well, we went and got their best pitcher. Now we're going to get their next best guy. We're going to go take Correa, too, because we need a shortstop. At certain points, even the richest teams in baseball run out of money, and they have so many bloated contracts on that roster. And they still have so many holes to fill. I don't know how, if I'm a Yankee fan, I can look at next season and beyond going, they're going to be great. I just can't do that because there's too many holes in that lineup.
Shohei Ohtani might not pitch again this season. He got hit yesterday, too, by the way. There was a little bit of an altercation in the Angels-White Sox game. I didn't see the replay. Have you backed into it?
It was behind him, and you know how guys kind of push away from the plate when it's inside?
Yeah.
He backed into it and caught it in his calf.
See, Madden said that La Russa was thrown at him. La Russa said it wasn't. That sounds like if it was behind him, there was more of a chance for that. How about Salvador Perez tying Johnny Bench's home run record? 45 home runs, primarily as a catcher, the most in a single season. I didn't see that coming from Sal Perez. I'll be honest with you.
He's a hell of a player. The Astros were out trying to get him a couple years ago. They know that he is the guy that not only defensively, he's fantastic behind the dish, and he really controls the pitching staff. But, man, offensively, he's always been a stick. I don't know that he's been that power number crazy like he has been this year. But when you start talking about how few and far between you find catchers that do both offensively and defensively, Pudge Rodriguez, obviously, Mike Piazza, and, of course, Johnny Bench, who he tied with the home runs yesterday. But you think about it, that's about it. I mean, when you talk about guys, we're talking about more Maldonado types. The catchers, if they're good defensively and controlling a staff, you don't really expect a whole hell of a lot out of them. It's a bonus what you get from them offensively. He's a stick. He's a hell of a receiver behind the plate. He's got really, really smart baseball skills in terms of managing that pitching staff. And if you weren't talking about the wonder kid of Shohei Ohtani and doing something that we haven't seen since Babe Ruth and Vladdy Guerrero chasing a triple crown, in another regular year, Sal Perez would be the talk of baseball.
I think he'd be the MVP if he was in the NL.
Absolutely.
The AL is loaded with MVP candidates.
You know why? Because of the injuries to Tatis Jr. If Tatis Jr. was healthy all year long, maybe not. But because of the injuries, I think you're right.
It's leveled the playing field in the NL, the fact that he's missed a bunch of games. Sal Perez, 45 home runs, his previous career high, 27. He's 31 years old.
I saw the Royals fan catch it when he hit it yesterday. Mm-hmm. You give it back?
I'm not me.
Are you keeping it?
I'll make a trade.
I think I would do the same. I would give him the ball in exchange for like a jersey and some signed stuff that is at least game used.
Yeah, you know, Ted DiBiase, $1 million man. Everything has a price. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd negotiate. I'd give it back to him, but I'd get something in return, season ticket, something like that. I bet you the Royals think about trading him. 31, rebuilding team. He'd have a lot of interest in the offseason. 713-780-ESPN, the Astros window. When is it closing? We'll take some of your calls next. Also coming up next, what we need to see from the Texans in Game 2 as they head to Cleveland to take on the Browns. It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Well, what we need to see right now is the fact that there is a program in Houston, Texas that benefits kids in Houston, Texas, trying to get a second chance at an education, and it all stems from your donations. That's right. It's Cars for Kids. Go to carsforkids.org right now, and you can get all the details on how you can make a difference in children's lives when they're trying to get their degree. It's real simple. If you got a vehicle laying around, maybe it's collecting rust and dust. Maybe it's not even working. Maybe it's in your basement. I'm sorry, your basement. Maybe your driveway. You're in a field, in the garage, somewhere. Maybe you don't even have the title for it. And you're like, you know what? I don't want to put any more money into this clunker. I just want it off my property. Well, they'll take care of all of that for you and so much more. You know how they do it? They come to you with a tow truck. They take it away. They track down the title for it. They do all the dirty work. So all you have to do is reap the benefits. By benefits, I mean you don't have to pay to anything and you have it towed away, right? It's a tax deduction, so you're saving money there. You mentioned ESPN 97.5. You get a $50 gift card. So you're already hand over fist already coming out on the good end of the deal. But on top of that, then you know your donation's making a difference for kids. That's fantastic. All the money also is used at the Houston Can Academies, so it stays local for local kids. And a lot of times, kids have too many distractions. They can't afford their books. They need bus fare. All these things that are distractions if they don't have, but if they have them, they can focus on their education, are provided by the donations that you make. It's a truck. It's a trailer. It's a car. It's a SUV. It doesn't matter. A motorcycle. Donate it today if you can. And watch your donation go to work to make a difference. It's a fantastic program. It's why I love speaking for them. Check them out today. It's carsforkids.org or 713-225-4226. Right off the car, not the kid.
ESPN. 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Get into what we need to see from the Texans-Browns in about 5 minutes. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. What's the Astros window? Let's go to the HR&P listener line. John, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees.
John, gone.
John hung up.
Thank you for
that gives me plenty of time.
Instead of addressing John, I want to address a couple of people. I want to address the guy on text 713-419 that said,
I think you're going to give the whole number there.
Well,
for a second.
You know what? That's something that people before me would do. I'm not going to go that far, but I'm going to tempt fate close enough. You guys can try and experiment if you want to find the last four digits. Or DM me. Quit entertaining the idea the Astros should justify letting Correa go. No one's telling you that they should just let him go or justify letting Correa go. It's a reality. The percentages are not weighted in the Astros' favor. What I'm telling you is whether he stays or he goes, the team is still going to be good. That's all you need to hear. Stop telling me how to do my job. Thanks, and whether you're telling us or me, I'm speaking for the both of us right now, be a content listener. Because you do a better job of that, okay? And then, by the way, DK, who says the real dumbass is the guy who thinks that hair loss is somewhat directed to wearing a hat playing ball. First of all, you wouldn't know how to play sports, I'm sure. But here's the other thing. when you play sports all the way through college and you wear a hat every day, why do you see so many baseball players that have what we call ramps? Because where the hat hits the head and slides and creates friction every single day wears out your hair follicles. You know how I know this? I researched it. You know how I researched it? Doc Linville and others. You know why? Because it matters to me, so I'm talking to them about you. Now when you can get educated, we can have a conversation. DK, have a great weekend.
We appreciate you listening, though, DK. We hope you continue to listen to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5.
You know how I did that with the phone number? Do you want to bet that there might be two letters between the D and the K?
Why is that? Oh,
hi,
I see
Jeremy.
What you did there.
Hi, Jeremy. Welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us. Glad to have you along for the ride. All right, Friday, let's go.
That one's on me. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. John's back on the line, the HRP Yay! Listener line. John, you're in the Hive again with the Killer Bees.
Hey, sorry about that, guys. First of all, I'm a huge Carlos fan. I mean, huge. Mm-hmm. Paid him that much money for that long. Not into it. I'm not one to sell the future of the Astros away for one guy who has a huge history of not being able to get on the field, who's been, and I'm probably going to catch a lot of flack for this, but mediocre at the plate. Awesome glove, awesome arm, probably the best arm in the league, but I'm just not into that. So I think shortstops with his glove, they're all over the place. His arm, top rated, but his back, you can find a shortstop with the glove and bat very comparable to Correa. Just, I think the best thing about him is his arm and his leadership. I just not one to sell the future of the Astros away for one guy. I mean, it handcuffs them way too much. I think we could go get a better, bigger number one pitcher and use that money wisely. That's what I got.
Appreciate the call, John. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, John.
713-780-ESPN. Carlos Correa is my favorite player. I've not been apologetic by it whenever I say that. I think Carlos Correa defensively should win a gold glove this year. I think over the course of his career, John has a point. Maybe he hasn't lived up to expectations offensively. This year's not the case. This year he's been really good offensively. He's had a couple of other really good offensive seasons. Maybe not what you expected when he was drafted 1-1 and people were saying he's a future MVP, that sort of thing. But overall, he's been very good. The problem has been injuries at times. That's been the biggest of his problems. And he's had some quiet offensive years. He's my favorite player. I love Carlos Correa as a baseball player. I think he brings a lot to the table, not just defense, not just with the bat. I think his leadership's outstanding. I think he's one of the smartest baseball players in the league, too. He makes plays day in, day out that I don't think other guys have the awareness of making. Like, that double play he turned the other day was just brilliant. Like, a really high baseball IQ. So I love Carlos Correa. I don't love him enough to pay him $300 million for 10 years. I give it about a 10% chance. And I think, like Joel says, if it's to happen, it's going to be a Jim Crane thing, not a James Click thing.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think, look, I'm not trying to take anything away from Craig, but I've said from the get-go the main reason why I'm not in that whole 10-year, $300-plus million club for Carlos Craig is I'm looking at the body of work. Like, you can find lightning in a bottle. We've seen so many guys. Look, Luis Gonzalez was an Astros player that was good, not great. Luis Gonzalez hit 57 home runs 1 year. Did that mean that he was a massive bomb-hitting home run power hitter? No. Whether he had help or not, he had 1 year. So that's what you're leery of. And if you want to give a guy 10 years because of 1 year's performance, that's not a good way of thinking, Brock Osweiler. You need a bigger sample size of healthy, productive Carlos Correa. Not to take anything away from his defense. Not to take anything away from the intangibles in the clubhouse that he's picked up once Springer left. All those things are good. But to the caller's point, it's the first time he's stayed healthy so far, knock on wood, this late in the season. It hasn't missed time with injuries, not just one, but sometimes multiples. And from an offensive perspective, we heard the guys talking about it last night. Never has he entered this realm in terms of if he hits at least one more home run the rest of the season, it'll be his high home run total for his career. So he is having a career year. So he will get a career contract from somebody. But this is where Jim Crane's business sense and his analytics department led by James Click looks at it and goes, numbers state that from a consistency standpoint, this is not the norm. This is the anomaly that happens every once in a while, and you got to be careful.
What's interesting about Correa, and I think why people thought he would hit better than he's hit over the course of his career, was he got off to such a hot start, especially with home runs. Like, he hit 22 in his rookie year in 99 games. He had 20 in 153 games in his second year, a little bit of a drop there. But his third year, which was his best offensive year, I think, He had 24 home runs, which was his career high, currently is his career high. He needs one more to tie that, and he did that in 109 games. Like, he was at about a 40 home run pace that season, but again, injuries. But once you hit 24 home runs in 109 games, people think you're going to hit 30, 35, 40 home runs, and whenever he only hits 25, you wonder, well, he's been a little bit of a letdown offensively. No, not the case. He's been solid offensively, just maybe not what you expected after that third year. Browns, Texans, Sunday. What are a couple of big things you're looking for? We'll talk about this a little bit later on as well. But 13-point dogs, the spread is growing, by the way. 13-point dogs now for the Houston Texans. They go to Cleveland. No Odell Beckham. We know that.
But you know what? Again, we talked about how deep and talented, and I keep saying it's the most talented roster start to finish, top to bottom in the NFL. I need to see an offensive line for the Texans try and keep Tyrod Taylor upright with the pass rush of Myles Garrett and Jadeveon Clowney and their front seven. I need to see defensive backs, now that you've traded the best one on your roster, you need to have defensive backs, whether OBJ plays or not, that could slow down a very, very productive and talented passing attack from the Browns. And again, if you didn't watch that game, if you don't have the ticket, if you don't have, and you were watching other things or doing other things and didn't see that entire game, what you're going to see on the highlights on SportsCenter and all the recap shows is the interception that Baker Mayfield threw. What you didn't see was, for 3.5 quarters, him slinging it around the yard, making pass after pass, play after play, and leading his team to a lead against the arguably the best team in the AFC that everybody thinks every year, but it's again this year in the Chiefs. So there's a whole lot to be proven for a Texans team, even though they won in week one.
My favorite storyline, Jadeveon Clowney. Whenever he wants to have a good game, he has a good game. Playing his former team, I think he's going to have a good game. Coming up next, Jerry Palm, college football insider for CBS Sports, joins us next. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Time to geek out with CBS Sports writer Jerry Palm on the Killer Bees. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joe Blank and Jeremy Branham.
It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Before we get Jerry on, let's give away some free stuff. The State Fair in Dallas is back, and so is the annual State Fair Classic football game. Caller number 9 right now to 713-780-3776 wins a 4-pack of tickets to the State Fair Classic football game as the Grambling Tigers battle the Prairie View Panthers Saturday, September 25th at the Dallas Cotton Bowl. Plus, you get a copy of the book, Reflections of a Legend. So again, caller 9, 713-780-3776. Jerry Palm, college football insider for CBS Sports, joining us now on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Jerry, thanks for hopping on as you do each and every week. How's it going? What game are you most looking forward to Saturday?
Well, me personally, Purdue and Notre Dame. but that's because I'm a Purdue guy, and they're keeping our drum out of the stadium. So I want to lay 50 on them this time. other than that, I think Auburn, Penn State, and Cincinnati, Indiana. Auburn, Penn State should be pretty evenly matched. Auburn hardly ever leaves the South or goes that far north when they do. So that, of course, would probably be better if it was November and freezing in Happy Valley. But it's a whiteout game for Penn State. It should be not as easy on Auburn's offense as the first two games have been. I think it could end up being a one-possession game or maybe even smaller than that. And Cincinnati, Indiana, the Bearcats are trying to make a case for the college football playoff. This is the second best team on their schedule, at least in terms of the non-conference games in particular. Indiana was ranked to start the season before they lost to Iowa. It's a huge game for the Bearcats. They also play Notre Dame next, although it's 2 weeks off, also on the road. So an important part of Cincinnati's schedule if they're going to try and make a case for the college football playoff.
Is it safe to say it's a resume builder, not just for the Cincinnati program, but for their head coach who might be eyeing bigger, greener pastures, both financially and otherwise?
Well, I mean, I don't think Luke Fickell needs this win to get the USC job. I mean, what he's done so far at Cincinnati stands on its own. So he doesn't need a resume building win at Indiana or even Notre Dame. 11-2 season and win the American Conference is plenty. And it might get them still into the a New Year's Six game. But, this is a team that has the talent and the schedule to try and make a case for the college football playoff. 13-0 with wins at Indiana and at Notre Dame. As long as those two teams don't really otherwise disappoint, I think gives Cincinnati at least a basis for discussion.
So I got to ask you before we get off of this topic, because it's the first thing that came to my mind no matter what the matchups were. How in the hell are they not letting the world's biggest drum from Purdue in that stadium, Jerry?
Mostly, it just seems like they're being jerks. They only have one
Notre
tunnel.
Dame? What?
Yeah, I know. Hard to believe. They have one tunnel that the drum will fit through, and they have said that that tunnel is only for Notre Dame band and football team to use, so they're not letting it in. But there's another tunnel that's smaller that the visiting team goes through, that the visiting band goes through, and other personnel for the game go through. But it's not big enough for the drum to go through, even off the cart.
That's some BS.
7-foot-tall drum, 3 feet wide. It's been at every Purdue game since 1979. That's a shame.
Yeah, it's terrible.
But that freaks even longer since I was in the band, and I'm old.
Yeah, you mentioned Cincinnati being joined now by Jerry Palm, College Football Insider, CBS Sports. Cincinnati, best team in the Big 12, huh?
No, that's probably still Oklahoma. But that would be a fun game to watch.
I meant the new guys. I meant the new Big 12. Oklahoma's already in the SEC, as far as I'm concerned.
Oklahoma and Texas out? Yeah, maybe. I mean, if they were playing this year, yeah, Cincinnati's the best of the teams, of this year's teams that are going to be in the new Big 12 whenever that actually takes shape.
How badly does Alabama beat Florida this weekend?
Oh, I think they'll cover the 2-touchdown-ish spread. But not by a ton, maybe 20, 21, something like that. I don't know. I mean, Alabama, the only way Alabama gets beat is if they help you. They turn the ball over, give up punt returns and kick returns, give the other team short fields so that you don't have to go, 75 yards against that defense. But if you can go, 40, maybe you can get some points and make something happen. But, Florida's a good team. They're 2-touchdown underdogs, and they probably won't cover.
Jerry, in terms of Alabama, and we were talking about the USC job, how's Bill O'Brien already getting his name involved in that? I mean, obviously there's a lot of hard feelings and bad blood still percolating in the city of Houston over what he wasn't able to do and the way he did it in Houston. But, I mean, I get it. It's a stepping stone real quick to get back on the radar, just be Nick Saban's offensive coordinator. But it just seems kind of shocking to me that so quickly after faltering in Houston that he would be considered for the SC job.
Yeah, that's a name that would surprise me. I haven't heard it until you just said it. And I don't, to me the two main candidates are Luke Fickell and James Franklin from Penn State. And if they don't get one of those, I guess pretty much anything could happen. But that one still would surprise me.
You think Luke Fickell will leave Big Ten country, leave the Midwest?
Well, I mean, it's a huge job. Yep. I mean, USC is an elite job. So, yeah, I don't know how you even playing in the Big 12, USC is not a lateral move. That there aren't very many jobs that you can leave for USC and have it be a lateral move. And, Cincinnati certainly isn't one of those. So, I don't know how he'd turn that job down, unless he just really did not want to go to the West Coast.
Jerry, looking at some of your picks on CBSSports.com, what are the ones that you're most confident about?
Most confident in. I think Texas bouncing back this week and covering most of a 4-touchdown line against Rice. Also, Ohio State, same thing. I mean, good teams, and I think Texas is a good team, even if they're not, elite, which is where they want to be yet. They're still a pretty good team. They got embarrassed last week. Ohio State's a good team that got embarrassed last week, and are playing opponents that they can kind of take out some frustrations on, and I expect that both of them will.
Well, we talked about it, Jerry, in terms of when the dust settles, the pretty much the two that are guaranteed in our minds are Alabama and Clemson. But I've been critical of Oklahoma. We saw what happened with Ohio State against Oregon. Are you still think at the end of the year that the one or if not both of those teams are still right there in the mix and grabbing spots in the playoff?
You're talking about Oklahoma or Clemson?
I'm talking about Oklahoma and Ohio State.
Oklahoma and Ohio State. Well, Oklahoma's still undefeated, so they have an inside track.
I just
they get to
I'm just talking about what I've seen of both Rattler and the way they've played. They just haven't played impressively.
Yeah, but they've gotten the results. So, you know, it's still early in the season. I don't worry about it unless the results don't happen. And that's Ohio State didn't get the results, and so now they're in trouble. Ohio State can go 12-1 and can't do anything about whether or not they make the playoffs. But Oklahoma still can. They definitely have a better shot, both in terms of where they stand now and what they have left on their schedule.
That's what's weird to me so far about the early part of the season. And sometimes you draw too many conclusions about what a team is whenever it is so early in the year. And it is about getting the results. Like a team nearby, Texas A&M, they've not looked great through two games. They've gotten results. They're 2-0. Outside of Alabama and Georgia, maybe even Oregon in that mix. If you want to throw Iowa in the mix, you can there. Outside of that, everybody's kind of looked pretty average around the nation.
Yeah, it's early in the season, and you're coming off a pandemic year. So I kind of expect there's some feeling out for a lot of teams. That's actually typical most years. You find that you have problems that you got to fix. And when you have a team as talented as Texas A&M is a pretty talented team, although they're now without their quarterback, and I'm sure that was part of the problem they had last week, was having to change quarterbacks in the middle of a game. It just takes a while to get things settled and really know what you want to do. And Florida still hasn't picked a quarterback. You know, they're playing two guys. So it's still, there's still some feeling out. You know, when you've got Alabama, Iowa's looked really good. They're a veteran team. It's a little bit different. But a lot of teams are still trying to figure things out. And as long as you're getting the results, you don't worry about it. But when you have a day like Ohio State had last week, it's time to be concerned.
What do you think about that A&M situation? Do you think that they can hang on and tread water until they get their quarterback back? Or do you think that this could be a season-changing injury in terms of that program? Because we've talked about in the past with you how even before Jimbo, their biggest bugaboo has always been able to get, keep, and find the right quarterback for their system.
Yeah, we have to see what this new quarterback can do, right? What the backup guy can do. They've got a game this week where you should be able to try some things and still get the win and find out what this quarterback is made of before you throw him into, a little hotter fire. But I think, he's got to keep the fort held down for, about at least a month, right?
So yes. I think a month is the best scenario.
He's going to have to find a way to win games. But I kind of want to see him play a full game coming off a week of practice before, it's time to make any judgments about what he may or may not be able to do. And I don't know how much you learned this week against New Mexico. You might have to, see a more competitive opponent.
Jerry, looking at your upset of the week, Dell, our producer, is a big Miami guy, and I see you picking Michigan State at Miami to get the victory. What do you like about the Spartans to beat the Canes?
I like the way they've come out of the gate. That's a team that had been kind of, dragging lately the last few years, and Mel Tucker's come over, and they had a rough first year, which is not uncommon when you've changed coaches. He replaced Mark D'Antonio. But they came out of the gate. They scored on a 75-yard touchdown run, the very first play against Northwestern, blew them out of the building, had a good second week as well. And I just think that they're, finding their rhythm really early, and Miami has not done that yet. Now, the good thing, I think, for Miami, though, is that Michigan State's offense has been primarily rush, and Miami's done a pretty good job against the run so far. But still, they aren't finding ways to win comfortably against teams that Alabama is Alabama. You're not going to do anything like that. But Appalachian State is a good team. The team Miami should beat more comfortably than they did. And I just feel like Michigan State's coming in with some good mojo.
Jerry, thanks so much for hopping on. Good stuff as always. Enjoy your college football Saturday tomorrow.
All right, thank you.
You got it. Jerry Palm, a college football insider for CBS Sports, joining the Killer Bees. Dell, what'd you think about Jerry thinking that Michigan State beats Miami? How are you feeling about that game?
Miami hasn't been consistent. Watching them up close, at least consistently the last 2 weeks, can't string more than three positive plays together. It could be a drop. It could be a penalty. It could be a blown assignment or a missed tackle. I would be concerned as a Miami fan for that. Michigan State seems to be solid. Competition, Youngstown State, Northwestern, whatever. But they've been able to put play after play together. Miami has not done that. Until I see that on a consistent basis, I would have my concerns. I'm not surprised. Now, if you're a Miami fan, you go, it's a noon kickoff. Michigan State doesn't really come down south. The weather might be a factor. Just like Auburn going up to Penn State's a thing, Michigan State doesn't come down to South Florida very much. So we'll see how it goes. But it's a reasonable pick on his part.
Yeah, I'm a De'Aaron King guy, so you know who my allegiances are for there. All right, coming up next, we go around the NFL. The Hard Knocks big announcement. If you didn't catch it, we'll discuss it next. The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I was there bright and early this morning, got my B12 shot, got my check on all of my wellness and blood pressure and all the different things that I can keep charting my progress on to make sure that I am on the right path every single day in terms of taking care of myself. Your health is your wealth. You got to invest in yourself. You can do the same at Apollo Men's Health. So many of our listeners already have signed up, came in. I see them and I talk to them in the lobby. They said because they heard it on ESPN 97.5, they got involved. They're so happy that they did. And they're getting the results that you can too. It's a great process because you could be looking to get on a workout program. You might want to shed a few pounds. You want to recover quicker or you don't have energy and you want to find that energy boost you had when you were in your prime, in your 20s or your 30s. They can help you with all those things and so much more. And though the title says Men's Health, it's for women too. They have hormone therapy for both men and women. And all you got to do to find out about that and so much more, as well as make your first appointment, is go to ApolloMH.com. When you book it, you're going to find out that most major insurance is accepted, discounts from military personnel and first responders. You mentioned my name, Joel Blank. You get that B12 shot free on your first visit. And then you can find out what it can do for you, like the good things it's doing for me. Then be honest with them. Answer their tough questions with sincere answers. They're going to find you results. They're going to put you on a program that works, and you're going to feel so much better than you did before. From the weight room to the bedroom to the boardroom, they have answers if you have questions, and you contact them too. They have locations near downtown Houston to better serve you, and Dr. O and his staff are the best in the business. I love these people because they're doing great things for the people of Houston. Like me, it could be you next. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
Going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So Hard Knocks lives on. They're going to a regular season Hard Knocks. The big announcement on Thursday Night Football at halftime was that they're going to have a regular season Hard Knocks that begins in November, and they'll be following the Indianapolis Colts. I like the behind-the-scenes stuff. I'm a sucker for it. I like the fact that it's regular season. The preseason Hard Knocks kind of getting played out where you're talking to, like, guy number 70 on the roster, stuff like that. I mentioned the other day how I love the All or Nothings that they used to do. I guess they're not doing them anymore now that the Hard Knocks is having a regular season edition. The only difference between the All or Nothing NFL version and what the Hard Knocks is doing was that All or Nothing waited until the next offseason is, like, kind of the sample for what's to come in the NFL. So it kind of got you fired up about the NFL before there were actual games going on. I'm curious when this is going to air, first off, because, like, they're not going to get any ratings if it's on a Sunday. I think the normal one, I think, aired on Tuesday, right? So maybe that makes sense. You have Monday Night Football.
And you would think a lot of what you're going to get is going to be on game day.
Yeah. I mean, this is going to be behind the scenes following the players.
Oh, but is it? Because I heard Lance talking to John this morning. You know, Lance has a great relationship. Chris Ballard, the GM, is a friend of his.
Oh, yeah.
Ballard's already said no cameras in his office, no cameras in Frank Reich's office, no cameras in the player personnel department's office. Wow. So it's going to be more about the team, the practices, miking up players in practice and games. Is that going to sell enough?
No, that sounds terrible, actually. The All or Nothing thing, they had cameras in the GM's office. They had cameras in the coach's office. They had cameras in the quarterback room, but they aired it all on the offseason. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't as big a deal, but I could see why I could see why Reich wouldn't want that stuff to air, even if it's like 3 weeks later. I'm going to be curious to see like how much you actually see. Because the reason I like the pull the curtain back show is because you get to see a lot that you normally wouldn't see. But if they're covering it all up and they're just going to like players' houses to see what they're eating for lunch and having these cookouts, that's not going to intrigue me that much. So I guess it's a wait and see for me.
The other thing would be a lot of it evolves into off the field, right? Like we followed this player, whether it's a guy that's on the bubble or the veteran player, the superstar, but you really don't know them, and you see how their home life is, what they do when they're not at practice, what they do with things. You think that the GM and the football coach is going to be all jazzed about, hey, follow my best player home and see, like, Carson Wentz. There's already everybody coming out of the woodwork always wants to criticize Carson Wentz. But now if they show Carson Wentz, we know he's a religious guy, right? But what if Carson Wentz has to get out of practice because he's got to go to church, then he's got to go to a Sunday school meeting, then he's got to go to this, got to go to that, and then people are going, well, what the heck's he doing, man? Why is he not focused more on football? He doesn't have the right mindset. And then it's going to get scrutiny for a guy that's already over-scrutinized for a franchise. Why would you want to sign up for that?
Yeah, I wonder how much say the Colts had, or if this was just a strong hand by the NFL saying, look, you haven't done it before, you're going to be our guinea pig, and we're doing it with you no matter what you say, or if the Colts were willing to agree to some terms to have this stuff. But we'll have to wait and see. The first one airs in November. I'll be watching to see how it looks and how it turns out. No Will Fuller on Sunday for Miami, and it doesn't look like he might be playing for a while. Brian Flores, his head coach, during the press conference today said, we're not expecting Will Fuller to play on Sunday. It's not an injury. He's out for personal reasons. They asked him, and Brian Flores said that he's not going to answer any more questions about it for the, you know, because he wants to do a solid for Will Fuller. He was asked, you know, will he come back this year? And Brian Flores said, we don't know yet. But he also, that might be kind of like a little bit sensationalizing. He said that, but he also...
But to say that, right. You know what the wheels are turning in people's ears
but
going,
kind of a no
what
comment,
does that
though.
Mean?
Yeah, I want to hear the audio because all I saw was like the quote. But Brian Flores said, look, he's not playing on Sunday, personal reasons. I'm not talking about it any further. And then like when somebody says, what about the rest of the season? He's like, I'm not talking about it any further. You know what I mean? So he like didn't rule it out. It was a no answer.
It's just
out of respect
coming off for how it ended here in Houston. Coming off with a suspension, coming off the fact that, you know, he's basically, you know, in a lot of ways, but still paid handsomely for it, a Carlos Correa in I'm betting on myself. I signed a one-year deal.
Like 10,
I got a, yeah, for 10 or 11 to try and go out there and prove that I am do elite money from a receiver position. And then you have this. And it's there's so much uncertainty with this, the way it currently sits, that you have to – scratch your temple and start asking questions and have the wonders and the what ifs going, what's going on with this dude?
I'm hoping he's all right. He wasn't to practice today, wasn't to practice yesterday. Flores declining anything about whether he's going to return or when he's going to return. I was a little surprised that the Dolphins, I guess when they did it, they signed Fuller before the draft, right? So they didn't have Waddle yet. Dell, is the resident Miami Dolphin fan, what did you think of the signing of Will Fuller? Because, look, I like Will Fuller as a player. He certainly adds dimension to an offense. He can take the top off of a defense. He's the deep threat for sure. And he was very good with the Texans when he was healthy, the big when he was healthy.
He's like Correa in that regard, too. He could never be – he never stayed healthy.
Exactly. What did you think of the signing of Will Fuller? Because I didn't think that was a great landing spot for him.
If you remember that wide receiver market, we were waiting for those guys to come off the board. You know, Galladay had to have multiple meetings with the Giants before they signed him to a long-term deal. He was one of the few who did, and we saw what happened last night. Maybe they've made a wrong decision, possibly. It's not a surprise that the Dolphins gave him a one-year deal. They're desperate for offensive weapons. They ended the year playing like Mac Hollins and Lynn Bowden as their two wide receivers because of injuries. So they were hoping to go find some guys to help. Adding speed, that's what Will Fuller does. He's a vertical threat. They added speed horizontally and as far as crossing routes and shorter stuff with Waddle. He'll take you deep too, but they like him as a horizontal threat. So they added those two guys. They needed something to help Tua progress. And it's a one-year deal. They can get out of it really quickly. And if this turns into something where he's done for the year, who knows, or he misses more time, it's like, hey, we took a flyer.
Yeah,
they locked themselves up with him.
Can I ask you guys a logical, in my mind, follow-up to that, though, Dell and Jeremy? Did they also do this because they knew what they were looking at quarterback? And they knew that, hey, we knew Deshaun had said, while Will Fuller's contract was being brought up, I want Will Fuller here. As long as I'm here, I want Will Fuller here. And also looked at it like, look, we're going to take a flyer not only on a one-year deal to see what he can do, but we're going to take a flyer that in that 1 year's time, we're also going to pursue Deshaun Watson. And if that's truly his boy, then we get a feather in our cap in the fact that we got a guy he already wants to play with that would entice him even more to come to Miami.
Well, considering the reports, I don't think Deshaun needed much enticing. It felt like he was there. Miami was his number one choice from the get-go. So, sure, make him more comfortable. But I think it was...
But he had a no trade.
It appeared Miami was the number one. From the start, we heard Miami was the number one. So I don't know if he needed Will Fuller to get there. I'm sure it would have helped the process. I think it was simply, hey, we are lacking speed on the outside. Devontae Parker, nice, you know, jump ball target, nice contested catch target, but he's not the guy who's going to take you deep and burn you. That's what Will Fuller's there for. Well, we'll see, and that's what Waddle's there for. You look at that. You just looked at their depth chart. There wasn't a lot of speed there.
Can I give you a Jalen Waddle comparison, and you can rip it apart? He reminded me a lot of Jarvis Landry. In week one, he did a lot of the same stuff that you saw Jarvis Landry did there. And maybe it's the uniform.
It's not a bad thing.
I mean, drafting that high for Jarvis Landry, I like Jarvis Landry. But Jarvis Landry's probably not a first-round receiver.
Oh, I don't know about maybe not where he sits right now.
Right now, he was drafted late
first round. But I think that for a lot of years, he was considered the upper echelon of receivers in the league.
I think he's a more athletic, faster, quicker Jarvis Landry. Maybe not as good at hands, because Jarvis Landry does have
really good
hands.
Is that a slap or a slight?
No,
or is
no,
that
no,
a compliment? I think that I don't know how he feels about it. I think a lot of people look at that and go, it could be a lot worse.
I think just like their body type and the way they play the game, it might have been too. Miami was having run a lot of like shallow crosses and stuff, which you see Landry do a lot.
Yeah, he caught an RPO slant. He caught his touchdown on in motion, quick pop. Great effort for him to get in the end zone. I don't know what the entirety of what they're going to use him for, because the thought was he complement Fuller and Parker. They'd be the two outside threats. He'd be more of a guy you can use underneath, and then people will back off of him because of his speed. He'll be able to eat underneath and take short stuff into long stuff because of his run after the catch. I don't know what he is. I don't really see Jarvis Landry, because Jarvis Landry couldn't run by anyone. But they that wasn't his thing in Miami. He wasn't used that way. So, but yeah, maybe that short stuff you saw. But he got deep on a fade, caught a big pass to set up a field goal. So I think Jalen Waddle's just getting started. But Jarvis Landry has 3,000-yard seasons. If Miami gets that out of two in Miami, if they get that out of Jalen Waddle in his first three seasons, I think they'd be happy.
One game in, I liked him. Grade the comp 1 through 10. I think Dell's going to give it like a 2.
Joel, you go first.
2.
Oh, man.
Well, 1.5.
Man, I missed this one.
I
was bad. That was a bad comp by me.
Swing and a miss.
Yeah, that was a whiff on my part. All right, coming up next, we're going to take a look at some of the games around the NFL. What's on tap this weekend? The bigger games, we'll take a look at it from a Vegas perspective as well. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.